Well, hi there.
Hi, Robert.
Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out.
Yeah, I guess I'm not on there. Just this, so far, I guess I don't see me.
I see you, so I think
know, but okay. Right, but we usually, oh, that's true. We can't see each other the way it finally shows up. You're right.
All right, so anyway, for those who are watching this, this is May 26th, right?
2020. Yes, it's May 20, almost the end of May. Yeah.
This is our fourth of our little quartet of quarantine shows.
Yes.
And, you know, much has happened, I think, since 2 weeks ago when we were last around.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think, so again, I'm Robert Winters, for those who don't know.
Oh, right, yeah. And, I know. I'm Judy Nathans.
Right. I guess maybe we could sort of just start out with some sort of silliness on the civic, not so silliness, really.
Nothing silly, Robert.
Today was the first of the city council's finance committee's budget.
Oh, I know. Hearings. Did you watch? I watched some of it, but
I watched a fair amount of it. You know, via the computer, of course.
Right.
I am always tempted to try do the Zoom thing and chime in, but I just haven't brought myself to that.
No, there were no, there was no public comment.
There is at the beginning, at the end, traditionally.
Oh, I didn't get up at 9 a.m. to see that. No.
Right. So some of the major departments, and I would argue certainly some of the more controversial for good or bad reasons.
Right.
Departments for up today.
One
of which I think perhaps most significantly, at least from my point of view, and I think, you know, this was borne out in the question and answers, was the information technology.
Yes, that was the one they did not vote unanimously to go forward or something.
Vote unanimously, they voted 3-2 approve it and 6 not,
right,
which means it's held. So it is not forwarded to the full city council with a positive recommendation. And I think for anybody who's been following what we've had to say or been following much of what some of the political people have been saying, at the heart of it, unless I miss something, was the position where the city stands as far as
municipal.
Possibly moving on municipal broadband.
Yeah, right.
And I think, you know, there are one of two things that you could demand. You could demand city, go ahead, move on, create municipal broadband.
Just do the feasibility study for less than $1 million. I do not think it should cost $1 million.
Well, that's what I mean. There were two things you could do. One is you could just move. The other one is do what everybody's been really asking, which is to do this feasibility study.
Right.
And which, to me, it certainly sounds like a reasonable thing to do. But as Louis DePasquale put it, he says he somehow characterized that as being having a price tag of in the order of $1 million.
I know. I'm sorry.
And
no,
I don't accept that. But
okay.
But he also characterized it as $1 million study to see whether to move on a $1 billion program.
Okay. Now, well, all right. Now there's a lot packed. Can I just say something for a couple minutes?
Oh, yeah.
I'm an unpaid citizen that does a lot of deep diving into municipal broadband, especially lately. And I am going to do a community. Anyway, the bigger issue for me is, you know, you could get one person to do this research in all these different cities they keep touting, okay? And like San Francisco now is going to be the biggest city comparable to maybe do a public-private partnership. And guess what? They have a local internet provider already there, like this little train that could, that already was awarded some contract apparently. So my main takeaways are, number one, they have to look at, do you own your own municipal power, electrical light? A lot of these cities own the utility. Number two, which like San Francisco does not. LA, yes, they own, you know, Chinatown, power, water, whatever. The other one is, I, as a cable TV subscriber, like cable TV. And guess what? I looked at Concord, which also does own the utility. And I think the cheapest internet was $40, $50 a month. And then you had to go out and deal with Xfinity or somebody else to get your cable. So right. I'm just saying, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't do anything, but let's get a consultant to compare all these different cities that they keep touting that have made their money back. I mean, Patty Nolan said that, and Louis countered her. And there are sources out there that have both sides to it. I don't think anyone's completely paid back their, and it could cost $1 billion if you're talking about LA or, I don't know. I'm just saying, do a study. It shouldn't cost $1 million. That's all.
I would be happy with a study just to get some clearer view of what the
exactly
costs are.
Right.
I mean, when the original broadband task force went about their business, they were putting dollar figures on the order of $180 million.
Right.
Something that's in what, that order.
And that was like working with another partner. No one's saying you have to do this yourself.
Well, I think that from a, you know, now I'm going to put on my Louis DePasquale hat here as a fiscal guy.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it is, I've always felt from the beginning with all the discussion, because I would love to have municipal broadband.
Right.
But the thing is that it's sort of like, why did the city spin off the Cambridge Hospital as the Cambridge Health Alliance? It was because it's very, very significant concerns about the financial exposure and the risk, the financial risk of having it doing a major investment in something that could change overnight.
Okay. So is that a public-private partnership then?
In a way, yeah. I mean, the thing is, the city manager still manages to be in the position of appointing a lot of the members of the board of trustees of the Cambridge Health Alliance, so that in principle, we have some control.
Okay.
But in terms of the management of the hospital, no, we don't have control. It's still in the hands of the Health Alliance.
So, yeah, I think big cities go for, I mean, the thing in California, that this whole thing, it's called P-3, which I think is public-private partnerships. And they're all over the place in different kinds of industries. And I think the bigger the city, the more you need that with something like municipal broadband, where it's not rural and it's not where you own the utility. So right. I'm just saying, I think, you know, Mayor Siddiqui, to her credit, at the end of that discussion, or at least because it came up again, if you were listening to the, was it the OEM or the I don't know. It came up in the afternoon under something else. She said, we have to look at all the different. She was basically saying what you're saying, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We need to look at the facts.
I mean, the thing is, we are kind of in a very weird period now where city councilors have all appointed themselves as expert witnesses on all things.
And, they're not, because they haven't done it.
Not.
Because they know a lot about a lot of stuff, but I'm sorry, none of them have done a deep dive on this. Sorry, they have not.
But as soon as two or three counselors start presenting themselves as the world's experts on everything,
I know,
it's almost a competition for other counselors to try and compete with that. No, I shall be the great expert on all things.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm not trying to in any way suggest that city staff is expert in all things, but the tradition always was, and it really it's the way it's supposed to work in a city manager form of government, is that you have to have a little bit of trust in the city staff. Now, is there a question about that?
Yes.
Is it warranted to trust city staff? I think, well, that's a, if not, then that's a pretty serious question.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. The city manager and Lee Gianetti were very much eager to want to actually go before a city council committee, if should they ever start meeting again.
Yeah.
To actually lay out the reasons for their thinking.
Well, this whole digital equity study. Now, this is the first that he's saying that 96% of people have internet access, or that they sent out a letter to people. I didn't get anything. I don't remember signing anything.
What I believe they did is they did a survey, but, you know, and it's a randomized survey because
he claimed it went out to everybody, a mailing. I'm going to go back and look at that. But
the thing is that if they can make a case that, in fact, if the issue really is internet access, and that there are ways of doing that with far less
exposure, for people that really need it, although let's face it, we do need competition. I agree.
I would like some competition.
Yes. We only have, that's the other problem we have. We only have Comcast.
Right. So I'm very much willing to hear what they have to say. And if they can basically make a case that they can address the so-called digital divide or digital equity or whatever today's fashionable phrase is, and they can do so in some way that does not involve getting into the hardware business or partnering up in the hardware business of restreaming the city in some other way. I would like to hear how they think that can be done.
I mean, obviously the city buildings are connected. They have fiber. They have... And so-called the housing projects are, but that doesn't work. So I think they need to work on that level. And I want to see people that really can't afford it to do it. Because I would suspect that a lot of people in Cambridge can afford and they may be grown about it, but they can afford $70, $80 a month if that's all they want for high speed.
I don't know how much it costs to own a cell phone because, as you well know,
people are paying at least that for their cell phones. Right. I think that's where San Francisco is at right now. They started out saying they wanted a whole thing for the city, but I think that what I can see is that they're focusing on public housing. So right. I'm going to get more information as my unpaid citizen. I will do that. But, you know, I think we need to do these things. Yeah.
Just to that point about their seemingly focusing just on providing it to public housing, I think that's great that they want to do that. But if there's any one single thing that really does concern me about the way city operates at the city council level.
Oh, I know. What you're saying. Yeah.
Every imaginable concern
is only for people a certain segment.
But the thing is that, you know, if there's 100,000 people, they're not all living in public housing.
I agree. I didn't mean to say that they only should do. I just meant that you start at a level where find out where the need is. Okay. And then, yes, we do need to have competition. We do need to have another, because a lot of people don't want cable TV. I understand that. They just want a high-speed connection. But I'm just saying, we just need to look at all these other places that we keep touting as let's be like them. And it's just, you got to look at the details. You really do.
Actually, on that let's be like them thing, that's yet another issue.
Uh-oh.
That's kind of another big issue.
Street spikes?
That's been floating around, right? Yeah. And I think if I can remember how we actually do this, I'm going to actually switch.
Oh, you go to present, right? Present.
Yeah, I'm actually going to switch to a little window here right now.
Okay.
So are we seeing this?
You're presenting. Yeah, there we go.
All right. So
that's my photo.
Yes.
Okay. It's probably an unfair. I mean, this was at 4 o'clock on Sunday, so you know, it's not that full. Although there's a lot of sight, you know. So I don't know what it was like at noon or one or two. You know.
Well, the point I was going to make about it was this, is that, you know, I was, when I was seeing this and various photos from city councilors and others.
Oh, were they showing photos?
I just want to show at least this one here. Just touting the success or whatever of the opening or the reopening of Riverbend Park, right?
Riverbend Sunday.
Right, so which is just every other Sunday during the summer months, or every Sunday?
No, it's every Sunday
months.
From April, the end of April, right. to beginning.
Exactly,
of
April. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Now, the thing is, the big concern that was expressed by the city manager and others, public health officials, was that if we open it up, there's going to be massive crowds that it'll be an attractive nuisance, and then that'll be self-defeating.
And so, it is. I don't think it is.
Right. So, but people looked at this image and they interpreted, they said, okay, see, he was wrong. But, you know, the thing is, there's another interpretation I would also make.
Yeah.
Which is that if, except for the cyclists, because, yeah, I'm sure it's luxurious for the cyclists.
Well, that's what I used it. Yeah.
Right. But in terms of just the number of people that I've seen in every single picture of Riverbend Park was that, in fact, virtually everybody would have been accommodated on either side of the road previously, even if they hadn't closed the road down.
But this is, I mean, this is just returning to something we used to have. It's not like we're trying.
Right.
And I think that they really need to continue this indefinitely. Right.
If the point that they're primarily trying to make here is that this was a necessity for social distancing, I think they've not made that case at all.
No, they have not. No.
Right.
I went on the other side. When I approached this and I was walking to meet someone, I didn't want to deal with cyclists, so I walked on the other side, which was just as well. I mean, or I could have walked on the grassy part, which is very wide, you know, to the left of that view. So I'm just saying, it made no difference to me. I saw more people than I've seen in my miles of walks that I've had. So, yeah.
So to me, the significance of the images is really that we are returning some of our traditions that we like having. So it represents more of a return to normalcy
rather than
a boon to social distancing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
But, you know, again, on the theme of sort of comparing, you know, whether we're talking municipal broadband, comparing Cambridge's situation to others.
Yeah.
You know, there's a parallel here with people. It seems like every time I heard a city councilor arguing why we should either shut down Memorial Drive or close down other streets,
they'd
say, well, look what they're doing in Seattle. or look what they're doing in.
I know. It's always Seattle. Well, it's always these other, you know, progressive types.
Right. Or they would listen. They'd say
or New York.
Planning,
yeah.
They're
New
planning to shut down 40 miles of streets in New York. Yeah. Well, I saw they're actually looking at the particular streets.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And I'm primarily doing it to kind of just to make a point about the fact that if you're going to, you shouldn't compare apples to oranges.
No.
But you, if you actually look at the streets, like, for example, in our neighbor Arlington, now I'm not going to say all such streets, but when they said
they're very wide streets.
Right. Well, the ones that they said are there, these ones are going to be closed. Where were they? They were very low traffic.
Right.
Every car, every house had a driveway.
Yeah, it's a very single family kind of environment.
And they basically connected a road that was basically road that dead ended onto a park-like street.
Yep.
In other words, the net effect of closure of those roads was virtually nil.
Right.
Right. I was looking today in my old hometown of Queens, New York, at some of the roads that are closed there. Almost all of them are roads that are,
How did you see the map or how did you find that?
I get an update from a Queens newsletter.
Oh, good for you. Okay.
You know, my little bit of hometown nostalgia. And in fact, where are the roads that they're primarily shutting down? They're adjacent to parks.
Uh-huh.
And there tend to be low volume streets, whatever. Now, the thing is, so how much of that is comparable to Cambridge? All right. So the thing is, if you said, well, let's first start by ceasing traffic or saying abutters only on ones adjacent to parks. Well, what are we going to do? That I don't think you can close Garden Street, Massachusetts Avenue, Waterhouse Street around the Cambridge Common.
No.
Right? Maybe Waterhouse Street, except the buses use that.
Do they use Waterhouse?
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, maybe you could make the case of Memorial Drive, right? I mean, it abuts the Charles River.
During the week?
See, that's where I disagree.
That's a major thoroughfare. No, where are those cars going to go? They're going to go through Cambridge or something.
Exactly. But the political people are all touting the experience from other cities without actually looking at the street grid of Cambridge and seeing what's comparable.
Yeah.
You know, I am very interested to hear what they're apparently going to address this Thursday at a special city council meeting.
Oh, right. It's Thursday. I thought it was Wednesday. I think they changed it. But it's Thursday. Patty
Nolan said it was Wednesday at 3.
Oh, that's where I got
Thursday
the information.
Too.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is that Cambridge, just the nature of the road grid, the narrow, the width of streets, where the streets are located, what they connect to, the relative scarcity of roads that actually connect cross town, right? I mean, anybody who's ever gone west to east or north to south in Cambridge goes, well, if you're going to do that in the eastern part of the city, you'll probably want to go this road or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So certain roads, you just are kind of, you can't compromise them. I'm sure there are plenty of streets in Cambridge Port, for example, that could be turned into shared streets, slow streets.
There in Cambridge Port?
Where you could park, you could go on and drive slowly to park, which is what they're doing in many of the New York streets, by the way. They're not shutting them down. They're basically saying, if you live here, okay, but you got to go at 5 miles an hour just to get to your driveway and park your car. And if you're making a delivery, yes, you can do that too. So they're not absolute cessation of motor vehicles. It's just that you can't go racing through like a crazy commuter, you know? So anyway, the point I was just making is that when I hear all these statements, these grandiose statements being stated by city councilors, they're all based on false comparisons, you know? I hope they can find a few candidates for some streets which can be made available, because maybe that's a good idea, even if we weren't having this virus and a pandemic.
Yeah.
Right. It might just be a good idea. I mean, Dennis Carlone and others talked about neighbor ways and shared streets.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are some good ideas out there, but let's not say that we're doing this out of a public health need. Let's do it because maybe it's a good idea.
No, I mean, I've seen, like I said, I saw more people Sunday than I've seen in 2 months when I'm walking out. And I put on, 60, 70 miles a month just walking, jogging. And I live near the river. So I go, I just don't have an issue. But that's me,
I have some concerns about commercial districts. You know, people, a lot of ideas are being floated now about shutting down some streets in commercial districts so that restaurants can do a lot of outdoor seating during the summer months so they can survive financially.
I mean, indefinite, I mean, just temporarily?
I think temporarily, but
well, I could see it temporarily. But.
Right. But I'm sure that if something works reasonably well, even if it's done in an emergency, others will continue to say, hey, let's continue.
But you're not going to have outdoor seating, Robert, in November through the winter. So
no, you're not. But the thing is that, you know, so you could, for example, close down a street. I heard somebody was talking in Harvard Square area, shutting down Arrow Street, which is an inessential street. You know, you don't need Arrow Street to get need to go. Right. Could there be some a street, maybe Dunster Street? I don't know. Somehow I think not. Could you close Church Street, for example? But this benefits primarily restaurants and businesses that are on those streets. And that's not everybody.
My hair salon is on Arrow. But
there you go.
Well, but I usually walk there. And she's opening up and I'm getting my hair done this Saturday. Yay!
You can do it out in the street. Cheap thrills, right?
Yeah.
but anyway, you know, I think there are a lot of good ideas that should be explored here in terms of lane reductions, street closures, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the thing is the comparisons seem to be driven more by agendas than they are by reality. So I'm very eager to hear what Joe Barr and Luigi Pasquale and everybody really have to say about this.
Have you heard anything about Brookline closing streets?
But I don't know how much or where. And again, as I say, like with Arlington, if you look at the particular streets they were closing, they were not high impact.
No, I know. I understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I think Cambridge is just by its nature kind of a difficult place to do those sorts of things, but not impossible.
Right.
I think there are some of the streets out in West Cambridge where, you know, you could probably close down a street or two and everybody go, oh, this is great, you know.
Washington Ave, Avon Hill.
Right. Yeah, there's no traffic going up there.
They all driveways. They can just get
exactly,
out.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, it's it'll be interesting. But I did think it was an interesting experiment to see how Riverbend Park worked.
Yeah.
And again, the sky didn't fall, you know, so I think that's reassuring for most people, no matter where you come from.
And they probably could have done it sooner, but hey, you know, it's not like you couldn't go anywhere. All right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So we only have, let's see, I don't want to go be aware. We have four minutes
to go here.
So there is that meeting. I guess it's a roundtable just on COVID, right? On Thursday at 2:00.
Yeah, it's just another meeting on updates, no public comment. But the thing is it's also, I think that it has at least been touted as a meeting where they would address certain things that have been these nagging things like the road issue and whatever. So,
well, I'm it's sure all related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, I noticed there, just in terms of the stats, that there were almost no new reported positive tests of coronavirus in Cambridge over the last 3 days.
Oh,
it's like zero, one and zero, but there were four more reported deaths.
Yeah. You have to be tested to be positive. I mean, you have to be tested to get a result. So it's all a question of how many people.
I was expecting to see with the increased testing, a sudden jump. So to me, I was really quite astonished.
Well, they've had testing for quite a while now in a lot of places.
But they were opening new testing in Cambridgeport.
Yeah, but that's only if you volunteer to get tested, right?
Exactly. But the thing is that it's not like our numbers jumped, which was, I thought, very promising.
Overall, Massachusetts, if you look at our numbers, if you look at John King's map, instead of, you know, elections now, it's all about COVID. We're green, which means that we're going down. We were steady, and now we're in the green. So
I'm starting to feel encouraged by the numbers at long last.
Me too.
I think it really all depends on just how steadfast people remain with face coverings and social distancing.
Yeah.
You know, we have to do as individuals with freedom what they chose to do with authoritarian measures in Wuhan.
Well, that's the hardest thing in those those countries that are much more aware of the whole and the community. They went along with things where Americans don't to do that overall.
Right. Yeah. You know, in Wuhan, China, it's like they forcibly drag people out of home.
I know.
There's certain things that simply wouldn't go over here. I mean, we bitched and moaned about whether you should be allowed to you go without a mask in the middle of Library Park on Broadway,
right.
You know, in China, it's sort of like, nope, sorry, you're going.
Right,
you're
exactly.
Going into quarantine.
Well, you're put away for, you know, until you get back. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, it's very discouraging for me to see some of the kind of the mass crowding happening out of the States. Yeah. I think they'll have a price to pay for that. But I am starting to be encouraged what I see in Massachusetts. So let's just hope.
But do you know, yeah, we have one more minute, but, you know, I've been reading, well, everyone knows, you know, that 80,000 people died of the flu in 3 months in 2018 in America.
Yeah.
So I think that if people were wearing masks then, and this is with a flu vaccine. So I'm just saying 98,000 right now, it's bad, but I think we're so overly cautious, which is great.
That's right.
I think it's going to encourage better habits going forward. I hope.
I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah.
You know, one theme that, you know, that I will continue to harp on for the next year really is when bad things happen like this, what good things ultimately grow out of them? Better habits.
Right.
You know, I heard real estate values were jumping at 10 to 12% per year. Now they're maybe 2%.
Well, I think it'll be a renter's paradise.
I think it could be. And I think some of the issues about how to address the affordability of housing, maybe people will have to take a step back and think of other more traditional ways to think about that.
Interesting.
But I don't want to be overly hopeful about that. But
no.
But true. I think there'll be a lot
of changes. Yeah. It's going to be a long haul, though. It's
going to be absolutely.
Long. And we're hoping maybe to do something more frequently. We're going to figure it out technically, right?
Yeah, we may produce some our own shows. We'll see. But anyway, we're just about out.
All right, we
got to
hang out.
Now,
so. All right,
see you in a couple weeks. We'll see you all soon again.
All right, bye-bye.
Inside Out.
See ya.